up and just look through it, just turning the pages and just so enamored by it. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the Bible, something fell out. And when she reached down to pick it up, it was a leaf. And she said to her mommy, look what I found. And her mother said, well, sweetheart, what is it? And she said, oh my goodness, I think I found Adam's suit. Well, last week, we began a study of the creative process based on the two creation stories in the book of Genesis. Separate stories formulated for different purposes and different times, and actually centuries apart. The first story of Genesis, I need my technical assistant here. Thank you, honey. Okay, the first story of Genesis highlights the 7 days of creation, with humankind created on the sixth day. This version explains creation in the absolute realm. Here God is transcendent, a transcendent deity who creates good through the power of his word. And the second version, in the second chapter of Genesis, thank you, actually was written before the first, centuries before. It's the folksier, more colloquial tale of Adam and Eve, with humankind being created on the first day. This version describes how we use and misuse the creative process in the physical realm. Here God seems to be more human-like. He walks and talks and really engages in direct communication with Adam and Eve. This oil painting by Roger Vanderstein captures that traditional image of God in the second creation story. Now, in order to really understand the meaning that these stories had to the early Hebrews, we need to realize that they viewed history differently. It was before any written language had evolved, so there was really no emphasis on history as a record of past events. In fact, to the ancient Israelites, history was more story. It was thought of as taking place moment by moment. They were storytellers searching for the truth about their origin and who they were as people. Their allegories were never intended to be historical or scientific fact. They represented the people's personal connection with God and God's personal connection with the children of Israel. Realistic and accurate details were not as important as the symbolic messages. And so it is for us today, 6,000 years later. So metaphysically, the first story is really the story of the creative process. It gives us a 7-step blueprint to transform our lives, to consciously create the kind of life we desire. Now, consciousness is really the key. We are actually creating every moment with every thought and every act, but sometimes we're not conscious of what we want to create, and therefore, we create what we do not desire. As we explore the creative process, we will see the old fall away and the new reality manifest in our lives and in our affairs. So let's revisit the story. We read them both last week. Let's revisit the story to discern step number one. These verses have actually been called God's resume, and they are: in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind swept from God over the face of the waters. Now, last week, if you remember, we said that the first 4 words in the Bible are, in the beginning, God. Noting that the priestly writers who recorded this story used the term Elohim for God. Elohim means one God of many. Eric Butterworth says, Elohim means allness, omnipresence, one elemental energy, one mind, oneness. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The heavens metaphysically symbolize the realm of pure ideas, and the earth represents ideas as expressions or thoughts. And the text says, "The earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep." And don't we all, in our human skins, sometimes feel overwhelmed by the apparent darkness and chaos of this world? Facing life challenges, our human minds can resort to fear and worry and thoughts of lack, resulting in thoughts like, why is this happening to me? What did I ever do to deserve this? How am I possibly going to survive? Do those questions sound familiar to anyone? We can go there sometimes. In our darkness, we stress and struggle, thinking we don't have the resources or the energy to rise above the situation. The Metaphysical Bible Dictionary tells us that darkness represents simply the failure to understand that settles upon the soul in times of great trial. So our first step in moving out of that darkness is to acknowledge the importance of the chaos that we are experiencing and to accept divine guidance through it, and sometimes even divine purpose behind it. Sometimes chaos can give us that gentle nudge to push us out of our comfort zones and make changes in our lives, to help us pursue a dream or simply move on. I shared with a group this week that if I hadn't had some chaotic things happen to me in my life when I was living in West Virginia, I'd still be there teaching fifth grade, which would have been fine, but I wouldn't have had a chance to come to St. Louis and meet all of you and meet my wonderful husband, and I wouldn't have found Unity, because there was not a Unity church in probably 1,000 miles of where I lived. So you know, those things can really turn out for our greater good. And Carl Jung wrote, "In all chaos, there is a cosmos. In all order, a secret disorder, a secret order." Just as divine mind created the whole world out of chaos, so we can use the steps of the creative process to create the kind of world we envision, one of love, harmony, and peace. Elizabeth Sand Turner wrote, "God always has a blessing for us in every experience, no matter how trying, and we must not let go until we receive it. Our challenge is to hold on until the break of day." So back to our text. In the middle of this chaos and darkness, a wind sweeps in from God over the face of the waters. Now the wind represents that first subconscious gleam of understanding in humankind. According to Bible scholar Ed Townley, in this formless, dark void, we may not even know clearly what it is we are being called on to create. But there's a divine discontentment at work, a vague restlessness, an inner sense that something more is wanting to be birthed in us. So we have a choice always. We can choose to dwell in the problem or the status quo, or we can change our thinking, look beyond our physical earthly challenge to a greater reality. We can actually use chaos to establish, or maybe I should say reestablish, our connection with God, to discover or rediscover the power of the Christ within. And the process continues. This is really the first step. God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. So with those words, "Let there be light," a clarity begins to take shape in the formless void. The light represents realization, understanding, wisdom, and awareness. Charles Fillmore writes in The Mysteries of Genesis, "The first step in creation is the awakening of humankind to spiritual consciousness, the dawning of light for our mind, the perception of spiritual truth. The first day's work is the calling forth of the light of wisdom into expression." So the first steps of the creative process really are about receiving that illumination in our own conscious minds. This means that the more we open our minds and hearts, we wake up to the awareness that God is the source of everything. The essence of good underlying all there even when it doesn't look good to our human consciousness. When we truly take that first step and awaken to God within us, we are able to discriminate between that inner chatter of what we call the monkey mind. You all know the monkey mind, right? Telling you to worry, fear, and feel less than. And we turn from that to the divine guidance that comes directly from God. Spiritual light clarifies our thoughts and guides us away from personal ego toward the divine ideas that are always waiting for us to express. Eric Butterworth says, "We always stand at the crossroads of human experience, and the darkness of fear and indecision can overpower us. Which way to go? Which way to choose?" This reminds me of one of my very favorite poems, or a piece of it, from Robert Frost, from The Road Not Taken. "I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. And choosing light, making the light of God our focus, can make all the difference in our lives. It is the beginning of our creating what we want to manifest. And I am not going to stand here today and say that that is always easy. We all have times in our lives where we allow life circumstances to throw us off center. I'll be happy to share one of mine this week. Monday, I received a call from my veterinarian. We had done some simple blood tests on my 16-year-old cat, and she called with the news that my cat was going into kidney failure. And I'm telling you, I completely downshifted. I mean, I couldn't even process the rest of what she said. And I hung up, and I was really distraught. I called one of my prayer chaplains, and I prayed, and I got myself recentered. And you know what? It took me 24 hours, I'll admit it, but the next day I had regrouped, and I called the vet, and I got more information, and I really found out it wasn't as immediate as I thought it was, and that we could do what needed to be done in this situation. So sometimes we just take a little time to refocus and to refine that light within us. And as we work through the creative process, we are shown that there's always light behind the darkness, always order behind the chaos, because darkness is not the opposite of light. It is just the temporary absence of it. Similarly, a problem is not the absence of a solution. I did have some temporary solutions to implement with my kitty cat. In this consciousness, we can use what Emmett Fox called the golden key, and we've talked about this before. We can focus on the light of God and not the darkness of the problem. And that's what I had to do, and that's what we all have to do when we encounter these things that throw us off our spiritual center. I'm going to show you a short video in a second here that illustrates this beautifully. Some of you have seen it before. We used it in a class recently. But I'd like for you just to follow the directions as they're given. And appropriately, this video is called The Monkey Business Illusion. So here goes.
The monkey business illusion. Count how many times the players wearing white pass the ball. The correct answer is 16 passes. Did you spot the gorilla?
How many saw the gorilla? Raise your hand.
For people haven't seen or heard about a video like this before, about half missed the gorilla. If you knew about the gorilla, you probably saw it. But did you notice the curtain changing color or the player on the black team leaving the game? Let's rewind and watch it again. Here comes the gorilla, and there goes a player, and the curtain is changing from red to gold. looking for a gorilla, you often miss other unexpected events. And that's the monkey business illusion.
So the point is, our focus becomes our reality. Our brains are pattern-making devices, and we navigate our world through the patterns we hold in consciousness. And when something is a focus of ours, we see it everywhere. Sometimes we call that the Volkswagen principle, where, you know, if you have a Volkswagen, all of a sudden it looks like it's the only car on the road. Some of us didn't see the gorilla because we weren't focused on it. When we focus on our problems and fears, that is all we see, and we don't see the light and power of God. So instead of focusing on what's wrong, we simply need to switch, refocus, re-see our vision on the power and presence of God in every situation. We need to affirm, "Let there be light," knowing that we have within all the powers of the Christ. Just as light is the first step in creation, we can always claim light before making any decision, before starting a project, or simply on beginning our day. In order to see clearly, we need to illumine our minds. We are constantly receiving inspiration, divine current, if you will, from the divine. However, we need always to remind ourselves that it is there. We need to look for it. It needs to be our focus. And if God seems far away, guess who moved, right? We can never be separate from spirit except in our own consciousness. Instead of looking outside for answers, we can claim light and connect with our inner guide, the greatest guide of all. God saw the light, and the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness, showing that we must mentally distinguish the light from the darkness in our lives, and that darkness is only a temporary absence of light that always shines. And there was evening and there was morning the first day. Day represents that state of mind in which spiritual understanding dominates. Night represents the realm of thoughts that are not yet, I say yet, illumined by spirit. Light is the reality of God in all creation. It is the reality of our own potential. All overcoming, all healing, all self-expansion is the effect of the dawning of light within. It is this of which Isaiah speaks when we read, "Then your light shall break forth like the morning, and your healing shall spring up quickly. Your righteousness," which we know means right thinking, "your right thinking shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard." And Eric Butterworth reminds us that when God says in the creation story, "Let there be light," it does not mean a tiny little speck of light energy flowing through our lives. Spirit is omnipresence, and the whole of spirit is present at every space in the universe. That's really hard for us to wrap our human minds around. This calls for a God concept that's much larger than any of us have imagined. It means that the whole of God light is present in its entirety at every point where you are. When Jesus said, "I am the light of the world," he was not referring to himself. He was pointing to the I am, the divine flame that we experience at the point of our own I am-ness. And when Jesus told us, "You are the light of the world," he was talking about that inner illumination, that inner revelation, acknowledgement, and acceptance of the ever-present light within. He was telling us to recenter ourselves in that inner light and become a transparency for its radiance. As an expression of divine mind, we are on this earth to manifest love, light, and all the rest of our divine powers. If it were not for God's presence, this earth would still be a formless void of dark and chaos. So the first step in the creative process, as outlined in Genesis 1, starts in our own minds. It is awareness. the awareness that everything exists in and through the divine, that the creator and the creation can never be separated. The ultimate aim of every soul is to come to that awareness of our indwelling God. Let there be light means to let ourselves go into the realm of spirit, to illuminate our minds with the truth of God. And we're going to explore the other six steps of the creative process, coming up with some specific strategies in the weeks ahead. But for now, let us know that whatever it is we want to manifest in our lives, we begin with the awareness of God as our source, the source of all good. As our co-founder Myrtle Fillmore wrote, "With God in the midst of you, you can do all things." This is the truth. This is the beginning of the creative process. Let there be light. And now, as we prepare for our prayer and meditation, let us just take a moment to affirm the great truth of our Creator. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and in my life: God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life: God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Amen.